Okay then, so this week's Winterton podcast, we are going to start. There's only one place, guys. It's the top of the league. Liverpool are 8 points clear, the nine of City. It's almost too much for me to deal with at the moment. Dan, talk us through it.
Well, I think they've won the league now. They've wrapped up a good performance. Man City didn't really show what they're capable of, and they just easy pocketed him, and he was quite comfortable in the end.
Xander, you have focused on some of the talking points.
VAR controversy. I mean, Liverpool haven't had the best of luck with VAR, but you could say they've got away with a few lucky things yesterday. That Trent handball. I mean, the second one clearly wasn't a handball, but the first one, he's moved his arm out to stop the crossing.
The one that led to the goal.
Yeah.
So let's break it down, because in the stage of play just prior to that, their player handballed it. If they'd gone on and scored, that goal would have been disallowed because of a handball in the build-up to a goal, which we know VAR will check. And we know that any goals that are scored as a result of a handball by the attacking team won't be allowed. So that phase of play would have not continued anyway. We win the ball back, and we do go on the break, and I do get what you're saying, because I think if it's kind of your team, you probably want the penalty. Because we've then gone on to score, I don't think there was any way on earth the goal was ever not going to stand, did you?
Yeah, I think, because it was that early, I mean, it wasn't that, like the goal wasn't that much later, but if it was going to stop, it would have been stopping in the build-up of the goal, not after the goal scored. So
stop the play there and then.
Yeah, but there's been times that call's been given and there's times that it hadn't been given, so you can't really...
It's the consistency. Yeah. And what we're doing right now is we are focusing on VAR, and I don't want to focus on that because I want you to talk me through the first goal. What a strike from Fabinho to get that game going. Talk me through that.
Right, I just think... I've seen this stat, and every match he's started in, Liverpool haven't lost. There's been mainly wins, but draws in there, and I think he's a solid player, and I don't think he gets all the credit he deserves. But you could say that about a lot of Liverpool players. Like, they're not, like, such as like Henderson, that they're not amazing players, but they get the job done, and they know how Liverpool play, and they suit that role. Which...
I think Fabinho is... And he's proven it week in, week out, an amazing player.
Yeah.
And I think that strike was a long time coming. He's Brazilian, after all.
I think that's something that they need, though, just to marshal that back four. Because they've got Van Dijk, who's a very one of the best centre-backs in the world, if not the best.
Yeah.
But they need someone just to, like, just pick up the ball and find them nice diagonal passes and be like a pivot in defence.
And
he's
a bit of an anchor.
Yeah, he's always on the pivot. I love the way he turns and he just drives forward. It's absolutely fantastic to watch.
Yeah.
And you've talked about the pinging the ball. I mean, the second goal, the ball from Trent over to Robertson, absolutely fantastic. My brother texted me at half-time and he said, what a pass from Trent. I said, my voice is the way it is because yesterday, I said, you don't understand. They're doing that to each other week in, week out, three or four times a game. They're just switching it from left to right. If it's not on one way, go another way. And then the ball, the cross was absolute inch perfect in the header from Salah. Sublime.
I think it's, they know how each other play, and I think they get all the players get on with each other. And I mean, we don't know that, but it looks it, doesn't it? And it doesn't look like a player upset or unsettled there. And there's like no good bringing good tactics to a team that doesn't gel well with a manager or something, but you can see the manager's got all the players under his arms and they're...
Literally.
Yeah, playing well.
Yeah.
But on another day, it could have been 3-3. To be fair, City had quite a lot of chances that they lost, especially in like the second half. They had plenty of chances.
They had some. I don't know. I never really... They felt like half chances to me. I think the first 3 minutes worried me as a Liverpool fan. They had the ball a lot. We were panicking. We were sort of trying to hit the long ball out. And I thought, this cannot be the way we're going to play for 90 minutes. And then luckily, we calmed the nerves. I mean, obviously the goal helped because that was early on. And then you're two up by 13 minutes. I mean, we were in dream world. We really, really were. And I think that looking at that, it looked for us like it could have then become 3-4. And you never knew when we were... We looked like scoring every time we went forward, really. Whereas I don't think they did. I think they had chances. They were half chances.
I think... I mean, you could maybe say, you could argue with the quality of team Man City put out there. They had no Ederson, which is a big game because Ederson and Alisson, they're both at the top of their games at the moment.
Yeah,
they're similar sort of keepers as well. They like to play with the feet quite a bit.
Yeah.
But,
Yeah, he nearly got himself into trouble a couple of times, I think, Margot, didn't he? He's not quite able to play it out from the back as successfully. So in terms of the game, I mean, I spent the majority of it feeling quite nervous and a bit apprehensive, and then obviously City get the ball in the second half and the panic starts to sit in. I mean, by that point, we are 3-0 up, but as we know, City can score quickly. The blink of an eye, the game can change. They pulled one back. I'm feeling a bit edgy. I'm looking at the ref thinking, how long have we got? Yeah, we've got at least 10 minutes. It's not going to blow up anytime soon. Did City look like they were ever going to get something?
I think that one, you know, where Sterling cut it back across to Jesus and he wasn't expecting it. I think if that was Liverpool and it was Firmino in the middle, he's always expecting that, like, either the goalkeeper to parry it out or Salah or Mane to cut it across, and he's always, like, prepared for every outcome. As Jesus is a bit younger, but I think...
And he'd come off the bench as well, hasn't he? So kind of maybe not warms the game or feeling the pace of it, perhaps.
Aguero missed a sitter as well. De Bruyne put it across the six-yard box, and all he needed was the faintest of touches just to guide it.
Yeah, and he got nothing on
it. Yeah, and it was just... I reckon it's too little too late.
Yeah.
You don't want to, in the 78th minute, it's too late to...
Yeah.
Only a few teams can pull it back at Anfield. But
yeah. And at the moment, I don't think any team can pull that back at Anfield. I think we're in a league of our own at the moment.
A bit of heading practice for City. I mean, you see how many headers they had. And if that was another team, all they need to do was head it downwards and they would have had three goals then at the end. Did you see, like, the corners and that? That every time they won the ball, but it was flying over the crossbar, left, right.
There were lots of corners, actually.
On target. But.
Yeah, we were giving away a lot of fouls early on as well. That worried me. They had quite a few, didn't they, from set pieces. A couple, sometimes you're looking, thinking, is that offside? And it goes over, so it's not up for debate, and we're not sitting here talking about it. I would like not for us to have to sit and talk about VAR every single week, particularly after a game of that magnitude. I mean, for the neutral as you two can be, was it a good game to watch?
Yeah.
It was entertaining. Two heavyweights of the Premier League going at it. It was.
And it wasn't the disappointment. Yeah. I mean, Sky build it up as they do. Last year it was an awful game, 0-0, the late penalty miss. It was nothing to write home about, really. There was a lot of kind of building it up all week in the media, a lot on Sky. I mean, they had the countdown on. I noticed beforehand when the Wolves Villa game was on, countdown to kick off going from 3 hours to 2 hours, thinking, you know, this is a little bit excessive. It's still November.
It was always going to be the game of the season, though. Yeah. And there's no denying that. You've got City, who've won the league in the past two seasons, and then you've got Liverpool coming just
desperately trying. Yeah,
so close to winning it last year, but a couple of points in it.
And it was the heavyweight encounter, I think, that you've described. What about Guardiola then? Because he kicked up a bit of a stink on the touchline. He was very vocal. At the end, he was kind of quite sarcastic to the referee. I don't know if you saw that when he went to shake their hand.
I think him and Klopp are quite similar when something doesn't go their way. They both like to express how they're feeling there and then.
Yeah.
They're not very passive-aggressive, if you get what I mean. But I think if that was Liverpool and, like, City had handballed it, I think Klopp would have probably reacted the same way. Because it's that big of a game. It is. It's one of those you don't want to lose.
But I think Klopp would be a little bit more measured in that situation. Yeah. I think Guardiola, well and truly, he chucked his toys out of the pram. His interview afterwards, he was just quite rude. He was certainly sort of disrespectful to the referees and to the assistants. His interview, he didn't give much away. I'm guessing that's to avoid a fine. And all he kept saying was, you know, that's why we're back-to-back champions. We've won the Premier League 2 years in a row, and it's almost as though he's needing to reaffirm that, because the grip is slipping, and, you know, we never know what's going to happen. There's a long way to go between now and May, but it looks like that pendulum is swinging, and the wake-up call really there is they're not even second.
That's the thing. They've got Leicester now, and they're having a blinder of a season already. They're like, Joe, when they won the league in 15-16, they've got one more point in this situation than they did like 3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
So they've come, kind of, we'll move on to Leicester now then, because obviously they played Arsenal, it's like the tea time game. And they've come on quite quietly, really. They had the 9-0, which was really euphoric, and we all looked at that, and obviously that's made a difference on their goal difference. But the performance on Saturday, I don't think there was any doubt that Leicester were going to win that.
Yeah.
You're running because it's your team.
Yeah, from the start, the tactics were all wrong from Unai Emery, and I thought there was no pressure on Leicester. They just had all the time to pick out passes, and when there's James Maddison and Jamie Vardy there on form, there's no really stopping them.
I think you've got to be smart when it's Leicester, though, because they're now looking like that team. If you put a lot of pressure on them, and they win their ball, they look like that team that will just go down a counter and the other end will score.
And Vardy is always dangerous. He's always got the ability to be able to do that. And the second goal was a fantastic strike as well, wasn't it? Really top quality from an up-and-coming player, really, who looks to be Xander one to watch.
Yeah, I think if it's not his season this year, it definitely will be next year. And I don't see Leicester wanting to sell him, and I don't see him wanting to move if they're going to carry on playing like they are.
Do you see a big club coming in?
Yeah, I do. I do see like teams abroad, but I feel like maybe a City, a Liverpool, maybe even United or Arsenal.
United.
I feel like because they've got so much history, that could sway it. They've also got more financial backing, which could also sway it. But I think the way Leicester are playing and him himself, he seems too happy to leave, if you get what I mean.
And it seems a well-run club. I mean, obviously, they had the tragedy, the death of the owner, and that's kind of brought them together in many ways. There seems to be a togetherness around the stadium, around the team, the fans, the bond with the sort of ownership team as it is now. And you chuck Brendan Rodgers into that, who was a likeable character wherever he's managed. He's kind of received plaudits. And he's really got that team playing now the way he wants them to play.
He's got so many underrated people, like hardly anyone's heard of, but they're performing, they're doing impressive. It's like Frank Lampard, he's giving different people a chance, and now they're showing that they're paying him back for giving him a chance. It's like for Leicester.
Move on to Chelsea in a minute, just to finish on the Leicester-Arsenal game. I noticed that Tony Adams afterwards, he made a really interesting comment about Ozil. Did you hear that? He said, Ozil should be the icing on the cake. The problem is Arsenal don't have a cake. So what's he trying to say about the team?
They don't have the base. I think they have like the silly little mistakes in them, and I see Arsenal's problem is not scoring. You're seeing that a lot. They do score. I think it's when they go behind, they're finding it harder to get like back in front, and I think they just need like them couple of players that can keep a lead and can keep the team together, like a big captain. They don't really have a captain.
There's no leadership at the moment.
No player to look up to, no player to go to if like no confidence in the team. They just need like a Sergio Ramos or someone like that who gets the team like motivated.
I saw a stat like yesterday, and it was like they spent 240 million on that front four. None of them have played together under Unai Emery, and I think that's shocking, to be fair.
So what's the reason for that? Why have they not?
I don't know, because he lined up with like a 4-3-1-2, which doesn't include Pepe in, but it includes Aubameyang and Lacazette up front. But as they were playing against Leicester, they were coming as far back as wing-backs.
Yeah.
So if we wanted to hit them on the counter-attack, there was no way we could have.
No outlet.
And I think we just need to be a bit more... We need to go back to the basics of defending and then work our way up from there, because we've only won 2 games in the past 11. Yeah. And that's quite shocking.
It's worrying form, and I think the fans have turned. And I think the problem is now the media is starting to turn on Unai Emery as well. There was some mocking of him, I noticed, on Twitter. He came out, good evening was trending, I think. He's not winning himself any fans, is he?
I feel like, because the board said that they have 100% trust in him, but I think I think he's on his last warning now that's happened. Because I don't feel like they do have 100% trust in him. I think they're trying to motivate him just to get out some results.
It's almost superficial confidence, isn't it, that they're trying to give him, and it doesn't seem to be very genuine. And I think the fans' reaction as well, I think had that been at home, we'd have heard it a lot more.
Because they had talks with Luis Enrique, the former Barcelona manager, bringing in, and then they've had a couple manager talks, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was a new manager coming in over the next month.
Could that be quite off-putting to him, though, if he is hearing that? How must he feel in the job, then, that he's not really getting that backing?
He must feel a bit...
threatened.
Yeah, like he's just a bit unaware of stuff, that he ain't getting told what he needs to be told, because now he's just going to be like, what's the point of me trying to fix this team now that you're talking with another manager? But another aspect, meaning he could prove himself. Like, he might have to grind a bit more to try and prove himself, so...
I just feel as the game's changed that much, that quickly, I don't think the managers have, like, been prepared enough tactically to change with the game. And I feel like... That's where I feel like Wenger got sacked from. His tactics couldn't change as quick as the game
progressed. The problem is the two managers who are ahead of the game have been building that for a long time. Yeah. So Guardiola's got his style and he's had that for years and he's going to have that wherever he goes. Klopp similar, but when they both came into the respective clubs that they're at now, it took a while to bed that in. And they seem to be streets ahead of everybody else in the league at the moment.
Yeah, I just feel that his playing style, and he needs to stick to it. It might work one match and the next match it doesn't, but once you stick to something and the players start getting used to it, you will see improvements, and he needs a philosophy. Just like the Ferguson had his way of playing, like Klopp and Guardiola have now, he just needs to stick to it, and instead of changing it every match, just stick with what he's got and pull through.
I reckon he needs to start bringing in the youth, because like Martinelli, he's been like very good in like the Europa League and something, and he hasn't really played in the Premier League, and I think just to put a bit of youth in it, just to still want to prove themselves, won't they? So there'll be more, I don't know,
and
I wouldn't say
not
reliable. Yeah.
Well, there's a nice link there, because you touched on Chelsea, so we can talk about them now. They are an example of a team taking youth and using youth and doing well with youth. So I think they've kind of quietly gone about their business, really. They've kind of gone unnoticed. The top four looks to be written already. I can't see any change in that.
In a way, I think the transfer ban has kind of helped them, because they've had to realise that what they've got in like the youth and everything, they're going to have to use.
Yeah.
So I reckon it could have helped them more than buying in players, because they've already got a good foundation. So I reckon a bit of youth can really help it up a little.
Chelsea have always had that like good youth system, but with previous managers, they've never really trusted the youth.
Yeah.
It's always been, you're 18, you're going out on loan, you're 20, you're going out on loan. It's until they're like around 23, 24, that's when they start getting introduced. And I feel like now they've got the transfer ban, and also Frank Lampard, you saw it at Derby, he trusted the younger players as well.
Do you think there's anything in, so you mentioned the previous managers, is it a coincidence that they were foreign, not giving the players, the youth, the opportunity, whereas you've got an English manager now, giving English players a chance?
You could say that. You've had like some Mourinho, he likes his players to be, I wouldn't say veterans, but they're experienced and they've got like powerful names, like Ronaldo. If you've got Ronaldo in the team, your team instantly looks it looks decorated. I think that's the problem now with the transfer ban. They can't bring in those players. They've got to stick with what they've got. And Frank Lampard, fair play to him, he's brought the players
I
in.
I think because he retired, so like, he's only retired like a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He's bringing in what he wants to do and what life like as a footballer, like youth and everything. He's
absolutely
trying to
still
boost.
Fresh for him, isn't it?
Fresh in the mind, and he's trying to implement it onto his players.
Yeah.
And you look at Mason Mount, because he's worked with him at Derby. He knows how he plays, and he can not build a team around him, but can put him in the car and like knows like what players he needs around him.
I think
him.
He trusts him, and I think that's really important. And he looks a great prospect as well.
Yeah.
He looks like he's going to do fantastic for Chelsea and for England. So we'll touch on some of the other teams then, the also-rans, if you will. United, they won yesterday.
Yeah, 3-1. I mean, 2-0 up, looks a good lead. As soon as it goes 2-1, I'm thinking, not again, not again. Then I see the 3-1, which I think, after they've got the third goal, it's all over.
Yeah.
And I do feel this is a turning point for United. I mean, we lost against Bournemouth, but now we've got Rashford and Martial, they're now linking up again.
Yeah.
And you saw in the cup matches, they linked up very well. And you saw when Rashford scored that goal, the first player he went to was Martial. And he gave him a big hug and,
So a sort of budding partnership between them forming.
Since Martial's come back, Rashford's blossomed in a way. And
I think it's good to have them strike forces, though, that get each other, because it's way better playing with someone that you get than playing with someone that they don't know anything about it. And that chemistry is important.
Absolutely. It's that awareness, isn't it, without even looking. You just sense, you know where they're going to be. You're looking for them. Sometimes you see a pass played that it looks terrible because it goes out of play, but actually what you realise is that one striker is almost anticipating the other will be there, and it's the one who lets the ball go out of play who's mad, not the one who's kicked it out, because he knew he should have been there because they've got that telepathic understanding.
I mean, they're similar type of players. They both can play left wing. That's where Martial made his debut for United, left wing. Rashford played left wing for a bit under Mourinho. They both play strikers and they're both really pacey, so I feel like because they've got the similar type of playing style, they can feed off each other, and we saw that against Brighton on a few of their goals. So.
And we come up now then, we've got an international break, so you've got no Premier League for a fortnight. It could be that the kind of points from this weekend are settled. You talked about a turning point for Man United, or it could be that everything gets disrupted again. Players going off, the threat of injuries, the travel, the time. I'm worried because we come back in a fortnight, we've got Palace away. I'm just hoping our players get through unscathed.
I think the bigger it affects the bigger teams more, because when you've got bigger teams, you've got the bigger players, which the international teams look to. As like you said, Liverpool got Palace. I don't think many of the Palace players get into the international, apart from Zaha and that. But you look at Liverpool, pretty much every single one of their players will be at least featured in one of the matches. I'm just hoping that it doesn't spoil, like, key players get injured.
Absolutely, because it does ruin it when that happens.
It's just, I don't know, it puts people on edge, because now, like, if you hit a good run of form, you don't know, the momentum's gone.
Yeah.
You're training with your own country, aren't you?
Yeah.
So that'll take out all the tactics that you've heard from your previous, your club.
You've got to adapt.
So you've got to adapt to life again and life back, and it's just different.
Okay, we'll see you all after the international break.